ॐ ज्ञानस्मरंजस्य ज्ञानचैतन्यं
हरे
So greetings from Sayreville, like Sue Sayre. So it's an appropriate place. Nice. Quite a few new people are here. We always like to have these ceremonies quite intimate. So we chose this far off place. And the proprietor of the house, Gopakish Shore, he's a civil engineer. And he decided why not gut his living room, put down bamboo floors and make an authentic Jagannath temple. We'll see some of his children running around, triplets. And then his older son, Narayan, who came to India twice. And let me explain a little bit about the ceremony. So first, a question. First, let me explain what's going to happen. You see, I'm going to come. Of course, we worship Prabhupada because Vyas Puja means. Vyas means the original guru. Because Vyas is one who edits the Vedas, and the knowledge comes down from the Vedas through Vyas. The whole story is there in the cyclic succession. So one who represents Vyas, it's called a Vyasadhan, sitting on the seat of Vyas. It's called Vyasa Puja. It's the teacher shows his students and friends and well-wishers how to worship by himself worshiping the disciplic succession. That's the traditional way how it starts. So it starts with that. That's great. Then what happens? Then they put me on a big seat with many flowers. My mother will come. She'll be very happy. That's for sure. And then my feet were bathed. And then I'll speak a little bit. And then people will offer homages. And then there'll be a Pushpanjali with so many flowers are thrown on me. And then after that, there'll be 15 or 20 garlands that'll be put on me. And then there'll be a big feast that's cooked. There's a nice community around here of people that I've been connected to for many, many years. They're generally pretty good cooks. You see all these children that are here? They all grew up with me in their family. So these are like my grandchildren. I think when Bryn and Joy came, you saw they all greeted me. So it's a very intimate family thing. And then they'll offer me a big feast. And then I'll sit up here like this, and I'll give out mercy to everyone in the form of cookies. So here's the question I would like to ask you. Would you like to sit here? If it was all set up, not that you're embarrassed, but you could actually sit up here, would you like to sit here? Everyone's saying no. But when you put a post on Facebook, do you like it when there's 52 likes? Or 105 likes, you check how many likes I got. So we all like to sit up here. That's our problem. We all like to be in the center, right? But as you become a devotee, hopefully that desire reduces as your faith changes. I give seminars, the skill of happiness, and I do it with the hands, and I explain these are our desires, and I will be happy when, in the future, when the world conforms to our desires. And what's the problem with that? You have to be the controller to move the world according to your desires, but we're not the controller. And then even if you get it, it's temporary, so it's filled with duality. And even if it wasn't temporary, it's not real happiness. Real happiness is love and service. So as you get that faith, by an experience of that, as you get that faith, then you don't like to sit on the seat. I'm not saying I don't like it yet. You don't like it. You don't want to be in the center because you have faith. And that faith, it actually comes in disciplined succession. It's such a change in consciousness. I remember when I first met devotees, and I don't want to get that feeling. What happens when you get what's called the Bhakti Lata Beach? There's a famous verse. Ramanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna. You're wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get the Bhakti Lata Beach. And what's the Bhakti Lata Beach? The seed of devotion. And what is that? It's this faith. The faith is a conception. And it's based on experience. That what? That serving something higher and moving out of the center, dedicating your life, that's real happiness. Not actually to be in the center. And that's what bhakti is. Bhakti means when, what is the highest dharma? The highest dharma is when you want to please God completely. That's the highest thing. And that's the only thing that can actually satisfy the self. That's sabai, kumso, paro, dharmo, yato, bhakti, radoksachi, vaitikyapatiya, tayaka. The sages at Namashranya ask, what is the ultimate absolute good? What is the essence of the scriptures? Sabai, kumso, paro, dharmo. That the supreme, Yatova, is bhakti, it's serving. It's serving. It's serving sincerely, without motive. Not that you serve because you want to be recognized. You know, you serve. This is causeless. No other reason but love. And then that satisfies the self. So that's the faith. I remember, it's a confidential story that I told 100 times. It's still pretty confidential. This is what happened, how I first took up this service. Oh, it was so many years ago. I might be 1990 or something. And someone asked me for initiation. I don't know, should I do this or not? And then I went to a friend. The friend said, don't do it. You're not qualified. Don't do it. And it kind of like, I wasn't sure, should I do it or not? And then I said, okay, the way I'm going to decide this is I'm going to ask a sadhu in Vrindavan, who's very learned and is my friend, an old sadhu, because I lived in Vrindavan, so I had many friends. I've been in Vrindavan for many, many years. I've been a devotee for many, many years. See, I bought something today. I didn't even know I had it. Look, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, regarding your recommendations for initiation, I accept the following as my disciples, and their names are Dennis Winokur. Mm-hmm. 40 years ago. So I didn't know, should I do it? And I went to this respected sadhu. I said to my friend, I'm going to ask him, and whatever he says, I'll do. Now that is scary. That's what means letting go. That what means, you know, just accepting God's will. God's will does not conform to our desires. So to surrender is really hard. Why? Because here we are, we want this. This is our desires, and we want this, and we work for it, and we pray for it, and in the future we will get it. But God's desires may be this. And that's, you know, things go against your desire. So I went to see the sadhu. It's a very interesting point. And I went to see this sadhu. And I asked the sadhu, saintly person, I said, I have a question and I'm in two minds. See? Someone asked me for initiation into the line, and here's my two minds in the Bhakti Ratsamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, one of the main books. Would anybody like to learn this book thoroughly? Yeah, okay. I think next year in the Bhakti Center, I'm going to teach it for a couple of months. I know this. I studied. I wrote a commentary as I told it. It says in the Bhakti Ratsamrita Sindhu that it is the duty of the sannyas to increase the sampradaya, the family. I said, but on the other hand, being honest, I see when people approach me, there's a little desire for puja and pratishtha. Puja means, hey, jai, jai, jai. And pratishtha, distinction. I thought there's some. And so I told him, on the other hand, I have this. And then the sadhu looked at me. Heavy. It's heavy when you put your will in some type of authority above your own. It's heavy, but it's happiness. Because until we do that, we'll never become happy. We'll always be fighting and moving. So I don't know. I would say something like this. I went stark raving sane. But I went. That he said, have people approved? And I said, yes, it's approved. And he looked at me and said, and this is not the part that I want to repeat, but it's part of the story. He said, then I order you to do this. He said, not me, but Prabhupada through me. Now, here's the important part. He said, the point, thank you, Guru. He said, do it as a service to your Guru. He said, do it as a service to your Guru. And he said, and don't take too many disciples. Actually, I followed, actually. So as a service, somehow this is a service. There's a service. It's a very important service, actually. It's called representing God. And it's not just for the guru, It's for everyone. In the Bhagavatam is a famous verse, which I studied for years, and then I read a commentary. It said, Acharya mam vijanayam nava manyeta karijit. We should accept the Acharya, the Guru, as one's, at Krishna speaking, as my very self. Nava manyeta karijit. Do not envy him in any way. Of course, that's another point, because one thing we don't like is authority. So we get enmity with authority, because even if it's the right authority, don't watch out. You know, we want to be independent. Why? Because if we're independent, we have more leeway to kind of move the world around the way we want. So, but then the commentary said that doesn't just refer to the spiritual master. It refers to anyone who is in a position of authority. Because if you're teaching anything, if you have anyone under your charge, how do you guide them and direct them? You're the acharya. You guide them by your very will. So it's a service. It's a service that someone does. But they never should accept the praise on behalf of themselves. You know, in this book, Srimad Bhagavatamrita, it's an incredible book. I recommend all you to read it. It's an incredible spiritual novel. Incredible spirit about someone who's looking for the topmost devotee. And it's the sage Narada Muni. And it's great. And it begins, and he's at this place called Kumbh Mela. Anybody ever been to Kumbh Mela? Okay, Gadadhar. Take a preview at Kumbh Mela. Kumbh Mela, greatest religious festival in the world. It's beyond time and space, because at the auspicious moment, like 15 million people gave it once. And it's only a little area, but somehow they all squeezed it. I went to the Kumbh Mela. So anyway, it was the Kumbh Mela, and Narada Muni, he just took a bath. My God, when you take bath in the tree, the confluence of the Jamuna, the Ganga, the Saraswati, 5 o'clock in the morning, just, oh my God. And then hearing the kirtans, so they're before the deity, and they're just, it's such a great, and then they see this one sadhu walking by, a simple Brahmin married person. And they see he has a retinue of people, and he makes a little mud altar, and he puts out his shalagram shila, and then he begins to worship it. And then he's incredible. And then his worship is so much in the mode of goodness. You don't do worship to finish it. That's not bhakti. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You don't do it to finish. Bhakti means you do it in the moment. That's what bhakti means. Bhakti is not to finish something. Bhakti is when your consciousness is absorbed. So they saw him, and he did this whole worship and fed everybody else. And then at the end of the worship, he chanted a mantra. You know what the mantra said? The results for this puja, I offer back to you. I don't want anything. And then when Narada saw it, he said, this is the topmost devotee. He said, you are the... And he ran to him. He was so enthusiastic, because we want to associate with souls that have something good in their heart. And when we appreciate, when we serve them, then what they have in their heart comes to us. So, I'm not the top Oshiro. And then he pointed to somebody else, and then the story went. No one wants to be that has that taste for bhakti, but as a service they do it. Now, I'm just going to explain something about what that service is. And Gail knows this because she listened to the same lecture that I listened to. He's one of Prabhupada's god brothers. And his name is Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj. And I had met him. It was amazing. In 1982, I went to see him. And I, amazing. And I came to see him, and he was just sitting there, there were three or four people. And his ability to conceptualize and express things. Anyway, someone sent me a link, so I popped, I listened, very interesting. And I gleaned something of it that's very important. What we are searching for is harmony. Without harmony, there's no happiness. Should I copyright that and sue people who write it without my name? Without harmony, there's no happiness. Without harmony, there's no happiness. And what's the opposite of harmony? Who could say?
Disaster.
What? Who said? Disaster, you said? Yes?
Disaster.
What?
Discord.
Discord. Well, the, yes. The opposite of harmony is discord, but the opposite of the consciousness. What's the opposite of the consciousness of being in harmony? Separate interest. All problems is when you have separate interest. From some, if you have a partnership, what's the problem? When people have separate interests, when they don't unite as a unit, there's no love. With separate interests, there's no love. Okay, partnership, separate interests. You can't combine together with a common interest. If the unit doesn't become greater than yourself, it will never last. And then there's family. Family gets together, right? A peaceful family has a common interest, and it's harmony. It's harmony. And then even in a community, you have a community. Isn't it beautiful when you have a community, right? When there's a common interest. Right? And what happens in a community where there's a person with separate interests? Which is you. What's he say? Separate interest means what? Selfish. Separate interest means putting yourself in the center. There's no harmony. Harmony is also used for music. Think what music means, right? There's an effect. Right? And everything serves. You know, there may be a great musician, right? But if he's not serving the group, he causes a disturbance. So the Vaishnava philosophy is an ultimate harmony. It's a cosmic harmony. And the cosmic harmony means that actually everything is one. But with distinction, but everything is also one. Gail, what's that verse? Vedanta Tat. Come on. Pandit. The absolute truth is a unit. Advayam Gyan means consciousness, which everything is part of. It's a unit. It's a unit. And if you have separate interests from that unit, whether it's a family, whether it's a community, and whether it's reality, then there is suffering. And the main suffering is for yourself. Because you're going against nature. All suffering is going against nature. So to be happy, we and what does it mean? The interest means there is a desire, there is a will of that unit that's greater than yourself. So there's a will of God. And the will of God is that you are cooperative out of love. The ultimate reality, I love in our scriptures, the ultimate reality is defined as rasa vai saha. It is ultimate love. And love means there's an interest. There's an interest above your own, which you want to serve because you have a relationship with it. Bhakti philosophy means is a description of reality. And then there's a means of realizing it. And then there's an experience of doing so. And the experience of loving reality, which is following the desire of reality out of your own will because you love reality, because reality is attractive, because reality is beautiful, that's called prema. That's called love of Godhead. So how do you understand what the desire of reality is for you? Well, the first desire of reality for you is that you become enlightened to who you are, which is a part of that whole. You become awakened. That's called self-realization. When you understand the self, what you understand is I'm not the center. I'm part of something greater than myself, and the part is meant to serve. And I have a relationship, and I'm meant to love. And I'm not only meant to love, I love reality, I love everything else. So how do you find out what you're interested in? You have to have knowledge. You have to have an understanding. I was describing again when I first came to Krishna consciousness, this is 74, that was 1970. Because in those days, you know, we were young. One, Ravindra Surprabhu, he's a scholar and a very senior devotee, he said the problem with ISKCON in the beginning days, Prabhupada was the only adult. So there was this old, very senior, brilliant, spontaneous, you know, whatever it is, you know, high Vaishnav. We started a world society with a bunch of kids. Mm-hmm. And they weren't even well behaved. They didn't have good samskaras. And therefore, at the beginning, when you don't have knowledge, your truth becomes a passion. You overextend your truths. So they made it a line. Devotee means shaved up in the temple. If you're outside, you're not a devotee. It was so, like, it was like that. Made that line. I remember I had a mustache. I remember the first time I was in a temple, and they said, Prabhupada is here. They said, Prabhupada is here. They said, he's going to give out prasadam for all the devotees. I said, can I come? Because I had a mustache, so I didn't think I was a devotee. So they said, you can come. They didn't say I was a devotee. Like, actually, that's how I made the commitment. I was on the line. 150 devotees on the line. I was in the back of the line because I had a mustache. And I came in, and I remember, and I didn't have the faith yet to do things, but I remember when Prabhupada gave me the Rasgullas, and I bit into them. It was really amazing. And then I had that, all, whatever was keeping me back, it was gone. But I remember even before that, when I met devotees and I got this experience and I got this knowledge, I remember what happened. The most wonderful thing, this rock, it's called this existential rock. When you don't understand God, then your future is nothing. Your future is annihilation. You don't understand the eternality of the soul, then all you look forward to is non-existence. And that sits on your head. Some of you may be fortunate to have this realization your whole life, but I was confused. You know, if I thought there was a God, I didn't have any realization. And I remember it was like lifting that rock off my head to understand that you're eternal. So what happened? You get some understanding. And where does that knowledge come from? The knowledge comes from the sacred text. And what the guru is, he's a teacher. It represents Das. What does that mean? Hopefully, in a humble way, he's learning that message. He's applying that message. He's realizing that message. And therefore, he can communicate that message. He can give you the knowledge and understanding by which you can be inspired to understand that there is a reality, there's Krishna and Krishna's energies, and then teach you that there is a method and practice to realize it, which is bhakti. And then, hopefully, by doing that, you experience something of reality. And you understand that actually my life is meant. It's the most beautiful thing, and it takes time, and we practice it, and we struggle with it. But it's the goal, it's the message, it's the understanding, it's the example. Bhakti. Bhakti is when your consciousness, when your thinking is what pleases Krishna, which means what pleases Guru. Because the Guru represents Krishna. He represents what? The knowledge of Krishna, the will of Krishna. And also, by entering into that relationship, you give up your separate interests. You give up your, and we have, that's what we work for. That's what our understanding is. And if we, when we actually come to that, we actually become happy. We actually make our heart a place where actually prema can enter. So that line of teachers that represent the harmonious, one harmonious whole, that interest of reality, which we're part of, and then there's teachers in that line who have understood what it is and how to apply that knowledge by living it and following it. And then it comes in a succession of teachers, and that's called Guru Parampara. Just like the first verse of the Yoga Sutras, what does it say? Yata Yoga, Ata Yoga Anushasana. Ata, now, you're coming to some teachings. Anushasana. You're following some teaching. It's not something that's created. It's something that's eternally existing and realized and communicated in a way which you can apply it to your life. So, although I do feel this, I'm an ordinary guy from Brooklyn. I'm just sitting here today and representing Prabhupada, the teacher, my teacher, in the cyclic succession. And by sitting here and accepting that honor, I'm actually glorifying the line of teachers that have presented this message. And it's so wonderful. It's so wonderful because it can actually make people happy. Just like that drama that I do, which I'm trying to get some other scripts written, but I do that drama. And then when Krishna's in the coils of that Kaliya serpent for 48 minutes limp, and the gopis, tapta dukkha shunya, they're tormented. Krishna's their life. Without Krishna, there's no life. And then Krishna's in the coils of that serpent, and then he escapes. And then the son, the cowherd boy, is telling his mother, he said, what would any of us do without Krishna? What would I do without Krishna, without that joy? Even if we're not fully embracing it now, at least we have a seed and an understanding and a path to eternality, a path to reality, a path to love and devotion. And that comes in the Guru Parampara. And by Prabhupada's mercy, that energy, that teaching is coming through so many wonderful teachers and Vaishnavas around the world. And we were, and basically, and specifically, they give the holy day. Because the main process of giving up separate interests is love. Not an hour. I think I should give up separate interests. You'll never do it. You get married and you say, yes, this is my vow, this is my duty. Without love, it's hard to give up separate interests. So bhakti is the path of loving God, and his most attractive feature is Krishna. And the main process for doing that, which comes in our disciplic succession, is what's that last verse in the Bhagavatam? That is the last verse. But I was thinking of a verse a little bit before. That is the last verse. It's such a famous verse. Kaler doshe ajan. Go ahead.
Krishna.
This age of God is an ocean of faults, but there's one good quality by the kirtan of Krishna. What a process. You have direct communion with God in the form of his name. And by meditating on that, then the natural attraction for the name and the name comes out of the heart. So we're honoring that in this day. I'm representing it, but from so many teachers that come. So thank you all for coming on this wonderful day. I do feel honored by your presence. Shri Prabhupada ki.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful lecture. Before we go to reading the offering, I want to ask Maharaj Prabhu wants to share a few words on Guru Tattva or in relation to Maharaj.
Thank you.
I didn't get a mic, huh?
Om Jnana Simarandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Nirikam Yena Tadmai Shri Guruve. So I was born in the darkest of India, and my spiritual master has given me the torchlight of knowledge. So this is a very profound verse that we always chant, because to recognize that simple fact that I was born in the darkness of ignorance is a big step in one's spiritual path. It's a step of humility. There are five types of knowledge: sense knowledge, moral knowledge, knowledge of God in this preliminary stage, Brahman, knowledge of Brahman, and then knowledge in its complete stage of God, by God. This is by Bhakti Mata Kaur. So, what is Guru? Om Jnana Sivananda Sajnana Jnana Sivaka Chasur Naitam Jnana Sajnana. He gives us knowledge. So, does he give us sense knowledge? One time, I think it was a Chitananda Ashoka, but if the Guru knows everything, can he tell me how many windows are in the universe? The Prabhupada was the master of one line comeback. He said, How many drops of water are in a mirage? So there's sense knowledge, and sense knowledge comes from the senses perceiving the objects of the senses. The object, there's nothing wrong with the objects of the senses. They are what they are. What's wrong is in the consciousness of the perceiver, not the objects themselves, but in the consciousness of the perceiver. So sense knowledge is gleaning the world through the senses, information that we use. But it creates this whole thing, how many drops of water in a mirage. It creates the mirage, and mirage becomes reality. And then we invest in that mirage as our reality, and that's what's going to give us happiness. So when we make that investment, it's like investing in a company that's going to go bankrupt. How much respect would you give me as a financial investor if I said, take all of your earnings and invest it in something that's going to go bankrupt? You would not consider me to be very astute analyst in terms of giving you information about what's a good investment. So knowledge of the senses, it's based on our consciousness. If our consciousness is contaminated, then we'll look at things in a contaminated way, and we'll perpetuate that we're the center of the universe and everything is made for our enjoyment, and thus it will only be the illusion of happiness. It will not be happy. The second knowledge is morality, moral knowledge. Moral knowledge means, based on sense knowledge, we want to determine what's beneficial for the world. We want to relieve people of pain and give them happiness. But again, it's based on sense knowledge. What we have is imperfect senses and contaminated consciousness. So morality can change. You go from culture to culture, and morality can be different. 100 years ago in the United States, what was acceptable, what was moral, 100 years later, you know, is considered antiquated. So that's based, moral knowledge is based on sense knowledge. And if you have 2 + 2 = 5, and you want to continue the mathematical theorem from there, you're starting erroneously. Third type of knowledge is recognition that there's a higher power. There's God, God the Creator. From that, there's some gratitude. But there's very little knowledge of who God is and what is our relationship. The fourth type of knowledge is when you speculate, meditate through knowledge, Shastric sources, the Vedas, and you try to speculate, and you come up with a logic. And the logic is, if there's form in this material world, then there must be formlessness in the spiritual world. And that formlessness, that Brahman, that energy, that vastness, that underlying spiritual current, which is the source of creation, which is the source of consciousness, must be formless. But the fifth type of knowledge is knowledge like that's given to us by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And what does he give us? First of all, he exposes Arjuna. Your moral knowledge is not going to give you happiness. It's not pleasing to me. So first, Krishna exposes Arjuna. Secondly, Krishna then says, this is knowledge. And he reveals Sankhya, analysis. This is material. This is spiritual. Yours, Nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. That which has no duration, that's material, that's temporary, that is not knowledge. That which has no cessation, which is eternal in it, that is knowledge. So Krishna gives that. Then he talks about karma. How if you act, there's going to be reactions to your actions. There's going to be vikarma, where you don't follow any rules or regulations and everything, your reactions will be sinful. And there's karma, you follow some rules and regulations, some guidelines according to Shastra, and then there'll be good reactions. And then there's akarma. Krishna leads
Arjuna all the way up to that point, telling what is action free from reaction so that you can get out of this material world. And then Krishna ultimately leads Arjuna to the point of love. Tesham satatam yuktanam bhajitam pritipurvakam didami buddhi yogantam yedamam siyantite. I'll give you the understanding by which you can come to me. You just love me. So we can't speculate how to love Krishna. What we need is, first of all, recognition. I'm born in the darkness of ignorance. And then secondly, when from that recognition, we realize we need help. So Krishna has outlined what the help is. In the Adi Purana, he says, one who says he's my devotee, he's not my devotee. The one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. And then also in the Bhagavad Gita, in that whole stream of consciousness, the whole stream of logic that Krishna is delineating to Arjuna, he says, Tadvihi paripatena paripashnena seva upadeksham pite jnanam jnanina tattva darshana. Take darshan with the truth and the seer of the truth, his teacher, one who is representing him purely, without any speculation, adulteration, or contamination. So we honor a person who has taken that service. As Maharaj has so aptly said, Guru never sees himself as Guru. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, one who says he's Guru, he's Garu. Garu means cow. The one who says he's Guru, he's Garu, he's a cow, not Guru. The one who sees the position that he's assumed, the service, not a position that's rubber stamped. You know, okay, now you're a Guru, and now you're not Guru, and now you're, no. He's assumed a service with a service mentality. This is how I serve my spiritual master. What we saw with the Guru Puja, the disciple, His Holiness Dhanadhar Swami, offered arti to his guru. Prabhupada offers that to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Who offers that to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj? Who offers that to Bhaktivinoda Thakur? That chain, that disciplic mind, that is a connection. What's yoga mean, after all? A connection. It is a connection to Krishna, the original Adi Guru. That's from whence it all comes. And the person who recognizes it's all coming from Krishna, all this knowledge is coming from Krishna, all this direction is coming from Krishna, and acts according to that connective line of teachers, and who is a good disciple. It's like there's a bona fide teacher. And what separates a bona fide teacher is the order of letters. The order of letters, teacher, if it's just changed around a little bit, it can become cheater. It's the same letters. But because he keeps order, he keeps the line. So you keep a line of letters, logically it assumes a concept. But because he keeps the line, teacher, and doesn't change, becomes cheater, then he's teacher in the line of spiritual master. And the farthest thing from a guru's mind, a bona fide guru's mind, is that he is guru. He's just a humble servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And that's what qualifies a person to be a guru, and a person to sit on the Vyasasana, and a person to get their feet washed, or be barraged with flowers and garlands and cookies and all kinds of things. Some may call it the perks of the job. In actuality, the guru actually cringes at the thought that it's because he knows it's not for me. All this is Krishna. It's just the handoff. A good quarterback doesn't run the ball every time. He hands it off
he passes it, he's facilitating others to move the team forward. So a bona fide spiritual master is one who has that mentality, that my guru has given me the torchlight of knowledge. I was in the darkness of ignorance, and he has illuminated my eyes. Now let me serve him by taking what he's given me and passing it on. That's why Prabhupada named Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because who needs to change the logic coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Who has that right? The only one that has the right to speak it is the person who won't change it. He won't change the letters in teacher and become cheater. But he'll keep the letters and he'll keep the flow of logic that Krishna has given in Bhagavad Gita intact, without deviation, without interpretation. So this is the position of the teacher, and we're very fortunate to be here today and to honor a teacher in our line. He's my godbrother. He is, in many ways, my shiksha. Gives me instructions, gives me guidance. And it's an honor and a privilege to be here. And I thank you very much.